Suspicious signs. My health status to continue on as a student and proceed into graduate study speaks to the utterances within the medical dictionary in 1743 by Robert James and the Evolution of Madness. Contesting admission, J. Peters, 2008. There I was, in the back of a police vehicle, peering into the front part of the cab and looking at the computer screen between the driver and his partner. The screen read, "Suspicious signs." At least, that's what my mind saw. I suspect I read that from the computer screen because these particular signs are ruptures in language. According to the literary theorist, Derrida, these signs signal new meaning in the system of signification. Thus, according to the police's computer, I was creating language in this new season of contesting admission. I looked at the sign of the building they had brought me to. I had been here before. 1 year earlier, when feeling suicidal, I took myself to Liberty General Hospital for an evaluation. I was told it was the only place where I could see a doctor in less than 6 months. Back then, when I came after feeling suicidal, I went to psychiatric triage in the emergency room and was given some soda and sent home shortly after seeing a clerk. Now, I saw the sign again. Bold letters read, "Psychiatric Emergency Room." Of course, still in handcuffs and under police supervision, I backed away from the receptionist. A few people were watching television, and they glanced up briefly. I compulsively said, "Josephine. Josephine," a few times before sitting down. The police officer told me to calm down, but I wasn't out of control at the moment. I was just incoherent. The receptionist called me over to the desk and asked a few questions. My name, my phone number, an emergency contact, and if this was my first time in the emergency room. I answered back, "Josephine, Josephine, Josephine," the name of the staff member from the English department from the previous semester who had called the police. Within 5 minutes of this questioning, I was given an ID bracelet and asked to follow a nurse behind the triage area into the emergency room proper. Once again, just like the year before, I was asked for my choice of beverage. I asked for ginger ale and smiled graciously. After about 5 more minutes, I was asked to walk down a long corridor with mirrors affixed to the ceiling so that the guards could see past the corners in case of any danger to their clients. Then, I was asked to wait in a room until an evaluator could see me. With a cup of ginger ale in my hand, I peered out of the room to see another room housing a guard. Walking down him, I stopped and looked in, and he asked me to get back into my room. I did just that. Turning around, I noticed another set of doors in the opposite direction and heard my friends through those doors. Very plainly, I heard the voices say, "We are still filming your movie. This is the final scene. Everyone is here for your big finish." I was ecstatic. My movie was finally coming to an end. We could all be together again. My family, my friends, and people from the past and present would all be united once more. I kept inching out into the hallway to see if I could make out any movement past the door where my loved ones waited. The guard, now irritated, asked me to get back into my room. Feeling on top of the world, with a blockbuster Hollywood movie on its way, I became defiant. "No, I'm staying here," I said. Saying this, I crushed my soda cup in my hand to show control over the situation. That was when the guard and the other two men he summoned at the last second tackled me. I fell, and they injected me with a shot. I woke the next day in a hospital room outfitted for 2 people. I looked to my right, and there was a middle-aged Chinese man lying perfectly still. I tried to get more sleep, but I couldn't. Instead, I gazed at the man for a few hours before the mental health workers assigned to my room called me in for breakfast. The unit at Liberty General Hospital was set up much like any other hospital. There was one long hallway where the patients' rooms were located. Perpendicular to the hallway was the nurse's station, the medication room, and further down, a lounge, the offices, and the dining room. Right next to the nurse's station was the quiet room, the place where patients went when they couldn't behave. Outside the dining area, a meal cart was parked and waited. We had to go up to the cart and say our name, and we would be given the tray of food. That first morning, I grabbed my tray and sat down at an empty table. I was not hungry, just poking at my food. Pushing a walker, a middle-aged woman inched by me, crying. white powder crusted around her mouth. I lost what little appetite I had. It was then that I met Elizabeth. She sat down next to me and started talking about God and the devil. Not fully aware of my new surroundings yet, I stood up and walked away, saying, "I'm going to disengage." However, with my fondness for eccentric policies, I came back to the table periodically, only to say I was going to disengage when the conversation became too stressful. In my mind, I was in an FBI or CIA laboratory, working in tandem with the New London University to monitor my behavior and report the results to the Army, which was interested in my stamina training from excessive stimulant usage. Because there were no stimulants in the hospital, I figured I had to be quick before I lost my concentration, or else I would fail the tests. In the hospital, I patrolled the hallways, most of the time goose-stepping and holding my chin in the air like an old-world dictator. The unit had to know I was in control, which I was sure would be conveyed by my behavior. I knew that I was being observed, but I had no idea how many people were watching and how much they could see. That was when I found the video cameras at the nurse's station. They could see the entire unit. Without saying so, because people were listening everywhere, I simply pointed to my eyes and then to the cameras to make it known that I was aware I was being watched.